It's Friday, March 17th, and the Al Franken Show is on the air.
The basis of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the first hour of our Friday program. And time for, as always, our brunch with, well, always for the last 2 years anyway, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives in the history of that body, now running for the United States Senate as an independent America's congressman, not just Vermont's congressman, although the 10 years I lived in Vermont, I was very proud that he was my member of Congress as well. Congressman Bernie Sanders, and the website for Bernie, Bernie.org, which was just given an award as one of the best websites, Bernie.
That's
great. Congratulations. Bernie.org, you can check it out. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Congressman, last week you missed our show because Barack Obama came to town.
Yep, beyond belief. And in fact, it was probably twice as many people as we anticipated. And we were able to get about 1,200 folks inside, and we had about 1,000 people outside. So we had to go outside and make some remarks to those people. But Obama was great. There was a lot of excitement, a lot of very good feeling, and I think a real sense, at least in Burlington, and I think in the state of Vermont, that this country is going to move in a very different direction than we're currently going. So I apologize for not being on the show last week, but that's why.
Yeah, well, you were missed, but I'm glad you're back. The town of Newfane was the one that got the most publicity, but there were five towns, I believe, altogether in Vermont a week or so ago that voted for resolutions asking you to sign John Conyers' resolution 635.
Well, not quite. But what there were five towns in the state of Vermont on what we have is March Meeting Day. That's our town meeting day where local, where people all over the state get together in their communities and deal with school budgets and elect local officials and so forth and so on. But it is, throughout the years, other issues have been brought forth at town meeting day. And in southern Vermont, there were five towns that dealt with the issue of impeachment, and five of them voted to ask me to introduce articles of impeachment for George Bush, which I respectfully declined to do. I did not think, for a number of reasons, that that was the right thing to do. I think, obviously, in a Republican-controlled Congress, it's something that will go zero. It'll deflect attention from the most important issue facing us, and that is making sure that we end one-party government in Washington right now. We get rid of the Republicans in the House and the Senate, and we focus on the elections that are coming up. But a number of people did write to me and did call me to do something which I've kind of been doing in any case, and that is to demand investigations as to how we got into the war in Iraq in the first place. And the Conyers Amendment, which a number of people in Vermont have asked me to sign on to, I think carries it a little bit further than where I had gone before, but it's an important resolution. And what it basically asks are the questions that I think millions of people want to hear answered, and that is, what did the president and his administration know, and when did they know it? The president, I was in meetings. I was in closed-door meetings with Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, and he said that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and they were poised to attack the United States of America. Okay, now, and that's what the president said. That's what the vice president said. That's what the Secretary of State said. Now, the question is, they now say, well, gee, they had faulty.
Please tune back during broadcast hours.
That going to war is the right thing for America and for the world. And, you know, somebody who helped lead the opposition to this war, needless to say, I didn't think it was a good idea. But I do believe we need to have these investigations. We need to bring the administration up there. Now, one of the things about the Congress that upsets me the most is not just that they're reactionary, not just that they give tax breaks to the rich, not just that they crack down on civil liberties. All of those things, obviously, are very bad. But what really bothers me is that they have abdicated their very important constitutional responsibility for oversight. And that is what Congress should be doing, no matter who the president is they should be taking a hard look at how our government is working, how various agencies of government are working, where there is waste, where there is fraud, where there is deceit. And it is an absolute dereliction of their constitutional responsibilities that the Republican leadership has not asked for or had serious investigations about how we got into the war in Iraq. What the Conyers Amendment basically is about is that, asking the right questions. And they're saying, look, if answers come back that suggest to us that the president was not telling us the truth, well, we might want to go further than that, talk about impeachment. But the key issue here is the need to have investigations and hearings so that we don't go through this again. Now, having said that, given the Republican leadership in the House and the Senate, do I think we are going to have those hearings? The answer is sadly, I don't. But I think that that is the step that we have got to be demanding. But most importantly, if we're unhappy about what's going on in Congress, if we're unhappy what's going on in the White House, it's time to change the political dynamics in America. It's time to end one-party rule. It's time to end a government which works day and night for the largest corporations and the wealthiest people, and try to make the change that we need so the government begins dealing with the real problems facing working families.
Bernie, you're an astute political observer. And,
I wouldn't go that far.
in my mind. And you have a bit of understanding of history. Not a bit of. I mean, you have a good understanding of history, and you've lived long enough to have seen a good bit of modern history, certainly the history of the 20th century. And it seems to me that what's going on in Congress right now is absolutely unprecedented. During World War II, you had a Democratic president, and he was, and to a large extent, a Democratic Congress. It flipped in 1946, as I recall. And yet it was Democrats. It was Democrat Harry Truman who put together the Truman Commission to investigate the White House and defense contractors to see if there was fraud and waste in war procurement. You had Democrats attacking Lyndon Johnson during the Vietnam War. You had Republicans taking on Richard Nixon in the early 70s. We had Republicans taking on Ronald Reagan over Iran-Contra.
Well, I think a couple of things. Let me say that I think, and what has been really said, it has been really said, when I'm on the Government Reform Committee, which is the oversight committee of the U.S. House of Representatives, and what I can tell you is when Clinton was president, and forget Monica Lewinsky, when Clinton was president, everything this guy did was investigated. Everything.
Including by Democrats.
That's right. All right, but the Republican leadership, we're going to keep a real close eye on this White House. Where are they spending their money? Why did he do this? How did he do this? We want to know. The American people want to know. Think about the Bush administration, not just the war in Iraq, which is certainly the most important. Think about Katrina. Think about the prescription drug Medicare bill, which was written by the pharmaceutical industry, and the fact that the guy who was the lead author of it in the House now works for the pharmaceutical industry.
Billy Towson for a $2 million salary a year.
Right. Think about the lack of preparation that existed for our troops in Iraq, and the incompetence is outrageous. How many real hearings, rather than not just photo opportunities or quick presses, real serious investigations have taken place discussing the incompetence of the Bush administration. So to answer your question, you're right. What Congress has been is essentially a rubber stamp. They have said, look, our job is not to make sure that our government runs as cost-effectively, as efficiently as possible. Our job is to protect our friend, the President of the United States, and the Republican Party.
Yeah, and it just seems to me that this is unprecedented. This is almost they're almost behaving like a cult rather than a political party. It's odd. My words, of course, not yours. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. If you have a question, comment, complaint, concern, or compliment for Bernie, give us a call, 1-866-440-8466. We'll be taking your calls. Drop in at TomHartman.com for our chat room. 16 minutes past you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
A long time ago, when the earth was green, there were more kinds of animals than you've ever seen. And they ran around free while the world was being born. And the loveliest of all was the unicorn. There were green alligators and long-necked geese.
Green alligators. Yes, it must be St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day, my friends. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And Jack in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. You are live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. I love your show. And
thank
hi, Bernie. I just wanted to give a thumbs up to some of your constituents in Vermont for voting to impeach Bush. And I got to say, I was really disappointed to hear your response saying that it wouldn't be practical given Republican control of the House and Senate. And I was thinking, you're there to give us a voice, and we just want to be heard. We don't care if it's impractical.
Well, Jack, let me stay on the phone. You there, Jack?
Yes.
Okay. Here's the point. And I want you to answer my question.
Okay.
Given the moment that we're in right now in American history, and I trust that you will agree with me that we have a totally disastrous administration.
Absolutely.
And leadership. What's the most important thing right now that we have to do in your judgment?
I believe we have to win Congress and
we have to
call the Senate back.
I agree with
you in that.
Okay. Now let's stop there and let's understand, and I think we will also agree, that if we don't do that, if we don't at least, and by the way, I am an independent. I'm not a Democrat.
Oh, I understand. Yes.
And after let's hope the Democrats win the House and the Senate. But after that, I don't want people calling me up and saying, oh, they didn't do all of this. You know, they will do what they will do. And we've got to make the Democrats much more progressive than they are right now. But nothing will happen. Nothing will happen in understanding why we got into the war. Nothing will happen in changing the direction of this country, Jack, unless
we
remove these.
I think by giving us a voice and getting more of the American public to realize what we hear, what we're thinking, will...
Okay, and the question then, you raised the right question, Jack. The question is, how do we do that? How do we do that? You're right. What we have to do, I think you're in agreement with me in the sense that what we have to do is mobilize ordinary people to stand up and change the direction of
absolutely
our country.
Absolutely.
Okay.
One good example of that not happening is the response to Feingold's proposal. The way the Democrats just backed off of that, I thought, was disgraceful.
Okay.
And I've never heard so many Democrats saying they want to quit the party, they want to become independent. It's kind of...
Okay, well, I'm glad you raised this issue, Jack, and thanks a lot for calling. Because, I mean, we certainly don't disagree on our goals. Where we have a disagreement is on our tactics. How do we go from here to there? How do we go, A, to get rid of Republican rule, and B, then to make sure that if the Democrats take power, we make them into a progressive force representing ordinary people and developing policies which will improve the standard of living of our people, provide health care to all people, change the direction of our foreign policy? That's the challenge that we have to go to. I kind of don't believe that issues like saying we have to impeach George Bush today helps us in that direction. Because a lot of people say, well, what are they talking about? Who cares? I don't have any health care. I lost my job. It went to China. I'm making $6 an hour. They're talking about that. I think we've got to go out into the streets, into the areas. We've got to talk to veterans so that they understand that this Bush administration is doing a disastrous job in terms of a VA budget and providing the kind of health care and other benefits that our veterans need. We have to talk to working people and say, you know what, you know why your standard of living is declining? It's because we have a disastrous trade policy by which we're losing millions of good-paying jobs going to China and wages are going down. You know why you don't have any health care? because Congress is run by insurance companies and the pharmaceutical industry. I think you got to stay on those issues that resonate to ordinary people. And you know, that's my view, and that's kind of where I'm coming from.
In other words, impeachment just becomes a game of gotcha.
It does, and I think a lot of people say, you know, what are they talking about? You know, I'm working for $6 an hour, and they're arguing about something which may or may not be right, but it ain't going to happen. How can we even talk about impeachment when we don't even have any hearings to ascertain the facts?
Well, and you've signed on with John Conyers for that starting point.
Which would do that, and that Conyers' bill is not going to pass either.
Yeah.
But at least the first thing you have to do is to ask, what did the president know, and when did he know that?
Yeah,
and I think that will make sense to the American people. But I don't want to deflect attention. I mean, Jack understands that the key thing we've got to do is win these elections, and I don't want to deflect attention from that goal.
Okay. John in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hey, John.
Hey. Hello. Hello, Congressman. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I wish I could talk to my congressman as much as I talk to you. I have a direct question about health care. Being in Congress, this is a very specific, straightforward question.
Yeah.
Who has a viable proposal, and who's written it, who's behind it, where does it stand, and what needs to happen?
Okay.
The Democrats taking power, what needs to happen?
A couple of good proposals out there. One is John Tierney of Massachusetts has one. Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin in the House has another. I'm not quite so familiar with the Senate. What Tierney's bill essentially does, and this is what I like about it, given where we are as a country today, it says that if a state wants to go forward with universal health care, the federal government will provide waivers and additional funding to make it happen. If a state like Vermont wants to go forward with a single-payer system, federal government will help. If another state wants to do it a different way, federal government will help. Where we are right now, that is probably the best approach that we can have.
That would be a great start. And then you'd have different states acting as little petri dishes, experimental.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's remarkable. Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, his website. Be sure to check it out. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Number 866-440-8466. We'll be back with your calls for Congressman Bernie Sanders right after this. I'm Tom Hartman.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Happy St. Patrick's Day. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, the website. And always great to have Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Mark in Mount Vernon, Illinois. You are live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie.
Hey, Mark.
My question is, we reached a $9 trillion debt, and I'd like to know who's going to pay this back with, I'm 57, and it figures out to $30,000 per person just in this country. And, you narrow it down to the workforce, that makes it more like probably $100,000 a person, you know. And there's not a state in this country that's even solvent. They're all in debt. And I'd like to know who's going to pay it. You know, it's not going to be Halliburton and the cronies of George's.
Well, Mark, you raised a very, very important question. And the answer, obviously, it's going to be our kids and our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, who are going to have to pay this astronomical national debt off, which is now about $8.3 trillion, and which is getting higher every single day. I think what is particularly outrageous that in the midst of this accelerating national debt, that President Bush thinks it's appropriate to continue to provide hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires. So in essence, what we are doing is giving tax breaks to millionaires and saying to working-class kids or middle-class kids, you are in the future going to be paying off these tax breaks that we've given to the wealthiest people in America. In addition, of course, because we have such a high national debt and huge deficits, the president and his friends are going to come forward and they're going to say, gee, we can't afford to maintain Medicare and Medicaid and veterans programs and environmental programs. We're going to have to cut back on this. which is part of what they are trying to do. So this issue of record-breaking deficits and huge national debts and more tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country and largest corporations is obviously a crucial issue that this country has to address.
Bernie, if you divide the $9 trillion by...
I think it's 8.3, Tom, but who's counting?
Yeah, well, what is now authorized and certainly will probably be spent by the time Bush leaves office. This is the fourth time since he became president. If you divide $9 trillion by 300 million Americans, which is a more or less rough number, you come up with $30,000 for every man, woman, and child.
That's right.
There's about 100 million working people in the United States. So that means that's about $90,000, say let's round it off to $100,000 per
just
person.
Just what Mark was saying,
Now, that is debt. If I have a $100,000 mortgage, over the life of the mortgage, I'm going to pay off $200,000 because there's interest on that debt. And so that means that every working American is going to have to pay $200,000 to pay this thing off. Where are we going to get the money?
Well, that's a profound question. I mean, I think the answer is that we need economic policies which, in fact, increase tax revenue coming into this country. Let's remember that when Clinton left office, in fact, we were running a surplus. We were beginning to knock down the national debt. Under Bush, the national debt is skyrocketing. So ultimately, what you need is an economy in which, among many other things, not only an economy that provides good-paying jobs for people, provides health care for people, but also is strong enough to create the kind of revenue that we need to increase to lower the national debt.
Okay. Dave in Glasgow, Montana. Hey, Dave, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, Bernie, this is in regard to the wiretapping.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been sitting here for months listening to this stuff, and there's excuses from Congress why they don't investigate, why they can't investigate. Why doesn't Congress, somebody in Congress, take it to court? I thought the judicial...
People are taking it to court.
Well, I thought, why can't they get an injunction against them? I mean, they had an injunction against transit workers within 24 hours.
They had an injunction against Terry Schiavo's doctors.
Pardon me?
I said they had an injunction against Terry Schiavo's doctors. Good question. Bernie?
Well, Dave raises the right question. To the best of my knowledge, Dave, they are being taken to court. I think there are court proceedings now in process. To my mind, I cannot find any legal justification to understand why the president thinks that he has the constitutional or legal right to act above the law. He's the president, but he is not a king, and that he can do these things without a court warrant. What is concerning me is that there are some in Congress who now want to, in a sense, pass legislation to make what he's doing legal rather than stop him from what he is doing. I mean, the bottom line there is, we are all concerned about terrorism. We all want to defend the American people from a terrorist attack, but we have got to do all of that within the context of the Constitution of the United States and not let George Bush do whatever he wants to do whenever he wants to do it. So, I'm very strongly opposed to Bush believing that he can act without a court order, and we're going to try to do what we can. I'm not altogether optimistic, again, given the nature of who controls the Congress right now.
Mike in Celebration, Florida. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom and Bernie.
Hey, Mike.
Fellows, I got a campaign slogan for 2006 and 2008. It's a very simple. It's something every American can understand, and it's just, that's not good enough. I can imagine 500,000 people or millions of people chanting that that's not good enough. Preemptive war, that's not good enough. No universal health care plan, that's not good enough. Wiretapping without constitutional authority, that's not good enough. What do you think?
Well, I think that's good. And I mean, I think I got to say to you, Mike, that I think the good news is that more and more Americans are, in fact, understanding that what is happening in Washington is just not good enough. It's not what America is supposed to be. And what we have got to do, Mike, and I think what your slogan leads us to do, is to say, well, what is not good enough? Is the economy good enough? Well, no. Middle class is shrinking. Poverty is increasing. Gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider. Is that where we want to go? You mentioned health care. 6 million more people since Bush has been president have lost their health insurance. The national debt. Dave just called up about the national debt soaring. under Bush, leave a huge legacy of debt to our kids. Is that good enough? Foreign policy, preemptive war, is that good enough? Environment, the destruction of our environment, the fact that the Bush administration doesn't even recognize or refuses to recognize that global warming is a man-made phenomenon. So you're right. Those are precisely the issues that we have got to focus on. And when we do that, when we talk those issues to ordinary Americans, I think we win elections. And that's exactly what we've got to do.
Mike in Elk Grove, California. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, greeting to you, Tom and Bernie, two great patriots.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. My question, I heard on a morning show, KGO, local here in San Francisco, about from Ray Taliaferro, an oil burst, and I'm not absolutely on all the definition of it, but what it basically stated was that Iran is supposed to be turned over to euros instead of dollars beginning Monday. And this is supposed to be monumental, the impact it could have on our economy, as he indicated, approximately $1 to $2 trillion, and it will especially impact the wealthy. But what a trickle-down effect this could be, and I was just wondering what your comment might be on that.
Tom, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, there's talk. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who people, I think, in America misunderstand how much power he doesn't have, the president of Iran, really is more of a figurehead position. He has suggested that starting March 21st, Iran is going to begin a trading floor, a bourse, for oil, and they're going to denominate it in euros. And, you know, we went off the gold standard in 72 and basically went on the oil standard. People around the world are willing to take dollars because they can always buy oil with them because oil is officially traded in dollars. And there are a lot of folks who are very concerned that if the Iranians are successful in this, if they get some traction, if Venezuela signs on, if Russia signs on, if China signs on, if some of the big oil-producing and consuming countries sign on and start trading in euros instead of dollars, that the dollar will have no point of reference against which it exists. It'll purely be the full faith and credit of the United States and nothing else, not gold, not oil, and might begin to deflate rather quickly. And Saddam Hussein had threatened to do this just before we attacked him, and there's even a rather elaborate, I don't know if you could call it a conspiracy theory or not, Paul Craig Roberts, the former Republican editor of the Wall Street Journal, is the guy who's the main proponent of it, that was one of the reasons why we took out Saddam.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, it's one of those kind of interesting side shows that are going on with the whole subtext of the whole Iran thing. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Bernie, here's another bumper sticker that my grandma and living wise elders can relate to. We haven't forgotten the Republican Great Depression.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Here, I wanted to give you some ammunition that you can use against these clowns that try to call you socialists. On Wednesday, CNN, Lou Dobbs reported a new study by the Fiscal Policy Institute showed that raising the minimum wage helps business, doesn't hurt it. And they quoted an Oregon commissioner there saying that Oregon has the second highest minimum wage in the country and reports job growth doubled the rest of the nation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's the Fiscal Policy Institute. Just use that as ammo.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like $7.25 an hour here.
That's what it is in Vermont about. And Tom makes a good point. I mean, one of the many outrages that is taking place in Washington, tax breaks for billionaires, and we can't raise the national minimum wage above $5.15 an hour. What a disgrace.
Yeah, it really is. It's a crime against the working people of this country. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our telephone number, 866-452-0620. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling. From glen to glen and down the mountainside,
And welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour, happy St. Patrick's Day. Tom Hartman radio program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, his website. I encourage you to check it out. Cheryl in Arcata, California, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And Bernie, best of luck to you. We want you in the Senate.
Thank you very much.
And I keep forgetting to tell you this, Tom. Thank you so much for writing What Would Jefferson Do, also known as WWJD. I love that book.
Well, thank you.
This is kind of radical what I'm going to put out there, but you know, I believe Congress has a fiduciary duty to use our tax dollars wisely. You know, in light of the fact that we have this unraveling Abramoff scandal and the fraud that's involved with the Republicans intentionally misusing our tax dollars, along with the, you know, quid pro quo politics, is there any way we can hit them where it hurts, get some punitive damages to be imposed on these Republican criminals when they get indicted, and help offset some of the costs of prosecution?
Interesting.
Well, my memory is correct. When Duke Cunningham was sentenced, he's a former congressman from California, and he's now in jail, found guilty of corruption. He had to pay back a not insignificant sum of money. I think that these are decisions that will be made by the judge when the jury makes their decisions. But clearly, if people have ripped off the American people, they should be asked to pay to the degree that they can pay back what they ripped off. No question about it.
Interesting. Jackie in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Jackie.
Hi. Earlier in the week, Tom mentioned a letter that Henry Waxman had written to the White House inquiring about legislation that was signed by the president, which is substantially different from the version voted on by the House.
It's the appropriations bill.
Yeah. And what I understand, I looked up his letter to Nancy Pelosi as well, and, you know, it could have been fixed in a legal manner, but to me it sounds like Dennis Hastert and Ted Stevens chose to do an illegal act and change the bill and then give it to the president, who signed it, the wrong bill. And Henry Waxman is saying this is an illegal act and places the president, makes the president above the Constitution. What do you know anything about that?
Well, I certainly know Henry Waxman very well. Henry, I mentioned earlier that I am on the government which has oversight capabilities in the House. And Henry is the ranking member of that committee, the leader of the opposition. And he has been doing a fantastic job in just these types of things, demanding investigations, trying to hold the president accountable. I would just say, Jackie, that this is just one of many, many examples where we have a one-party government that believes that it is above the law, that abuses power. And unfortunately, they keep going along their merry way. And that's why, among many other reasons, they've got to be removed from power come November. But Henry has been very consistent. I mean, you should hear some of these meetings that take place where questions are being asked, and we're just not getting answers.
Dave in Eureka, California, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
You, I believe, are two very good people, and because of that, I think it's sometimes hard to put yourselves in the head of these cons. We have greedy billionaire criminal oil tycoons running our White House and our government today because of election fraud, pure and simple, and I think it's hard.
Oop, I just accidentally dropped Dave. I'm very sorry, Dave. Bernie, given what you heard,
see,
you
that's
respond?
Going to be a conspiracy theory fraud right there, Tom.
No, it was,
Tom, I know you didn't need to drop Dave.
Yeah, it was a mistake.
Dave raises an issue that you and I have talked about, I know you have written about. And I think that there has been, what I will say, Tom, and you know, I think you and others who have been staying on this issue for how many years now? Quite a few, yeah.
You're talking about the voting machines and all this? Yeah, well, at least 4 years now.
Yeah.
I
think there's a growing feeling that if there is an element of risk, why take it? There has been, I think, in Maryland now, as I recall, the legislature there stood up very strongly against Diebold. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and what's amazing, there's this new story out about how the casino, the electronic
right.
casino machines, you know, gambling machines,
right.
their software actually has to be available to the state of Nevada at all times. Whereas Diebold and ESNS and all these companies, they refuse to give their software to any state or federal agency. The gaming machines, they do spot and random inspections. That's not done with the voting machines. I mean, it just goes on and on.
I agree with the caller. I mean, yeah. the bottom line is that if there's any doubt, go to a paper ballot, for goodness
yeah.
sake. The American people should be 100% confident that when they vote, their vote is going to be accurately counted. There are a lot of concerns raised about Diebold. The issue that you're raising now is the proprietary information issue, whether or not they have the right to retain the proprietary information for our elections. And, of course, they don't. So this is a huge issue that we are paying a lot of attention to.
Good, good. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie.org, his website, and please check it out. There's always a great, just extraordinary amount of information there. Plus, if you're so inclined, you can even contribute to his campaign. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks for being with us.
Well, good to be with you. Take
it's care. Always great. Talk to you next Friday. It's 57 minutes past the hour. You're right smack dab in the middle of the vast liberal conservative, the vast liberal conspiracy. Excuse me. No, it's not the conservative conspiracy. Definitely not the conservative conspiracy. And we will be back right after the news at the top of the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Zbigniew Brzezinski gave a speech on the Iraq War at the Center for American Progress. On the politics of fear, he said, but it is a part of this atmosphere of Manichean polarization, which is being bred by a phony definition of reality. Neither President Truman nor Eisenhower, Democrat and Republican, ever spoke of America being a nation at war during the Korean War. Neither President Johnson nor Nixon ever spoke of America being a nation at war during the Vietnam War. Yes, we have a serious challenge with the potential threat of terrorism, and we have to wage an unrelenting struggle against it, but to describe America repeatedly as a nation at war, implicitly, of course, with the commander-in-chief in charge, is to contribute to a view of the world by America that stimulates fear and isolates us from others. Other nations have suffered more from terrorism than America. None of them has embraced that definition of reality. Wow, talk about radical truth-telling. He goes on to say, we are not negotiating with the Iranians. We will not touch the Iranians. Why not? Are we perhaps trying to prevent a compromise? Do we really want Iran to desist, or do we want to drive it into extremism? It surely cannot be our deliberate intention to fuse Iranian nationalism with Iranian fundamentalism, but that is precisely what we are doing. Wow. I got to tell you, it is absolutely incredible what is happening here with the Bush administration. I lack words to describe it. But anyhow, time for just to break it up a little bit.
Touch of a screen.
Time for our voting machine alert.
Welcome to the future. Come try our voting machine.
It is easier to rig an electronic voting machine than a Las Vegas slot machine, says University of Pennsylvania visiting professor Steve Freeman. It's incredible. With regard to the software, the state of Nevada has access to all software. It's illegal to use software that's not on file. Electronic voting machines? Software's a trade secret. Las Vegas slot machines are spot-checked. State gaming inspectors show up unannounced at casinos to compare computer chips with those on file. If there's a discrepancy, the machine is shut down and investigated. Electronic voting machines? No checks are required. Election officials have no chip to compare with the one found in the machine. Background security. The Las Vegas slot machines manufacturers are subjected to background checks, as are employees who are also investigated for criminal records. Electronic voting machines. Citizens have no way of knowing, for example, whether programmers have been convicted of fraud. Equipment certification. By a public agency at arm's length in Las Vegas slot machines, a public agency owned by We the People, or actually the people of the state of Las Vegas, of Nevada, the city of Las Vegas, and public questions are invited when these gambling equipment is being certified. Electronic voting machines equipment certification, it's done by for-profit companies chosen and paid by the manufacturers. No public information on how the testing is done. No public questions invited. Handling disputes. Las Vegas slot machines. If you have a concern about a slot machine, casino must contact the Gaming Control Board, which has investigators on call literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They can open up machines to inspect internal mechanisms and records of recent gambling outcomes anytime. Electronic voting machines. In most states, a voter's only recourse is to call a number at the Board of Elections that may or may not work to lodge a complaint that may or may not be investigated. And this is how the Republicans got control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. Tell me there's not something wrong with this picture. Something seriously wrong with this picture. 1-866-440-8466. It's Friday. Any topics you want to get into, I've got a pile of news and you know, tips and events. And by the way, for example, the House of Representatives narrowly defeated an amendment. Just consider this. The House, this is a great victory on the part of the Republicans. They defeated this amendment in the House of Representatives. The Republicans defeated Martin Szabo's amendment. He's the Democrat from Minnesota. That would have provided $1.25 billion in desperately needed funding for port security and disaster preparedness. This amendment would have provided $300 million in additional funding to enable U.S. custom agents to inspect high-risk containers at all 140 overseas ports that ship directly to the U.S. Currently, we only have custom agents in 43 of these ports. It would have put up $400 million to place radiation monitors at all U.S. ports of entry. Currently, less than half of our ports have radiation monitors. And it would have provided $300 million to provide backup emergency communication equipment for the Gulf Coast in the event of a disaster. So let's see. We go from only 43 of our ports having inspection for high-risk containers up to all 140. We go from only having radiation inspectors in half of our ports to having them in all of our ports, and we provide backup communications equipment for the Gulf Coast. And that amendment was defeated by the Republicans. Meanwhile, the Bush budget, which most of the members who voted against this bill will likely support, contains an increase of $1.7 billion, far more than the Szabo Amendment, for missile defense, a program that doesn't even work but is being done by corporate cronies of the Bushies and other Republicans going all the way back to the Reagan administration. This is grim. Tom in Washington, Iowa on the line. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Hi. A couple of things. I'd like to talk about substantial reform of the House. The House hasn't changed size since 1913. We now have one of the worst ratios of representatives to population of any country in the world.
Right. Our Constitution originally suggested it should be something like 13,000 or 15,000 to 1, as I recall.
30,000 to 1.
30,000 to 1. Thank you. It's been a while since I read it.
Yeah, the history of it's interesting, and the way they came up with the current number was in 1911. They wanted to go up the number so that no state would lose a representative, and that number was 433. And then when New Mexico and Arizona were added, it brought it up to 435. Mm-hmm. And it seems like what we're doing is developing a second Senate. And these individual congressmen have just way too much power. They are it's
or in reverse, they represent far too few people. So
right, right. I mean every
or far too many people. Excuse me.
Right. Every our own influence is diluted every time.
Right.
You know, all the time.
Educate me here. If the Constitution calls for one member of Congress for every 30,000 people, and there are now 300 million people in the United States.
That would probably be an unmanageably large number.
Yeah, that'd be 30,000 members of Congress, wouldn't it?
I'd like to see it brought up maybe 5 to 7 times what it is now, and I've got a scheme on how that could be managed. But
5 times? You're talking 2,000 members of Congress?
Yeah. I don't think that's for.
Oh man, the Congress in India, the Parliament in India has, as I recall, a little over 800 members.
Yeah, and it's the only one in the world that's got a worse ratio than we do, I think.
Well, and they're notorious for being gridlocked.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a mess.
Well, I think one of the main reasons to increase the size is to dilute the influence that lobbyists are going to have over individuals.
Why not simply say it's against the law for corporations to give money to members of Congress
to
lobby?
That's an excellent idea. We'd have to get the Supreme Court to go along with that.
Right, because we did have laws to that effect.
Oh, yeah.
right up until the 1970s when the Supreme Court stuck their nose into this thing.
But I do think if we'd followed the scheme that they put out in, no state would lose a representative. If we'd followed that through with every census, the House would now be at about 1,500.
1,500.
Yeah, which I don't think that's an unmanageable number.
It is substantial.
It is.
But you're right. We would have more democracy.
Right.
Interesting.
And the other thing that I wanted to bring up is I just read an interesting book by Jeff Foe. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm sorry. Say it again.
Jeff Foe, F-A-U-X.
The only FAUX I know of is Foe News.
Right. He's not associated. It's called the Global.
Bill O'Reilly and all those guys.
It's called The Global Class War.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a book, about the first 2/3 of it deal with how NAFTA and the whole WTO thing came about.
Mm-hmm.
But he has an interesting proposal to change it. And I think it goes in with some of the things you've been talking about tariffs and so forth, which would be to take the NAFTA countries, the three NAFTA countries, and form them into a customs union, which could then have, the economy of the three countries would be integrated. We'd need to invest a lot of money in Mexico to bring them up to...
Yeah, but I got a big problem with that. It's not a matter of investing money in Mexico. Mexico's an oligarchy. It's not a democracy.
Right.
I mean, you've got a country that's basically run by 36 families. And until
the U.S., if you want to get down to it, I think.
Well, you could argue that the United States is an oligarchy, and I would grant that. I'd say it's a much larger one. There's probably somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 oligarchs in this country. But and so their power is proportionally more diffuse. But I don't think that the United States should be working out Mexico's problems, frankly. I just have to say.
Well, his argument is that the economies are so integrated now that it's almost...
Yeah, I don't buy it. I mean, I get it, but I don't think that's the road we should go down. Tom, thanks for the call. We're out of time. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I lived with them on Montague Street in a basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air. Hell, he started into dealing with slaves and something inside of him died. She had to sell everything she owned and froze up inside. And when it all came crashing down, I became withdrawn. The only thing I knew how to do was keep on keeping on like a bird that flew. Tangled up in blue.
Indeed, keep on keeping on, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. It's our best option for the future, is just to keep on keeping on, keep on moving forward, keep our eyes open, keep waking people up, keep getting active, keep getting involved, keep the word going, keep hope alive, to paraphrase or quote Jesse Jackson. That's what we've got to be doing. You can go over to Bernie Sanders' website, give him $25. Any politician, and I say that because... he just signed on to John Conyers legislation. This is what I did with Feingold when he came out, and I felt when I was, I can't give you a lot, but it's a gesture. I want you to know I'm with you. And I think politicians respond to that kind of thing. Greg Gorman is with us with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Greg.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Well, thank you.
I was going to say Happy Valentine's Day. I don't know why. I guess my mind's not in the luck of the Irish today.
I'll take both, Greg.
It's
did you hear my conversation with Alex before we went on the air?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was the St. Patrick's Day parade in New York City has turned ugly.
Well, that's exactly right. As a matter of fact, Tom, I don't know if you know this, I'm in New York City right now, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I'm about four blocks away from, or I was, from Fifth Avenue, where the parade travels. And I got trapped this morning in about 400 Marine Corps band members who were practicing on the street. And,
wow.
You know, it made me think about, all the news stories now about all the gay and lesbian politicians, especially, who are not allowed to march.
Yeah, it's like when did the St. Patrick's Day parade become a no-gay zone? Is this because so many Catholics, so many Irish are Catholic and Catholicism is historically opposed to homosexuality outside of the priesthood?
Well, that's part of, that's part of it. Also, there's an order, it's called the Order of the Hibernians, who actually manage the parade, and they've had a strict no-gay no gay policy, and even moreover, not that you can't be gay, obviously, but that you can't announce that you're gay by a sign or a placard or any kind of, announcement that you're gay and you're out and you're marching in the parade. And so it's, a few years ago,
what are they going to do? Are they going to start busting people for wearing flowery shirts? Oh, your scarf is too fashionable. You must be gay. Out!
Yes, you're too rakish.
That's right. Right. His hair is too well coiffed. I can see it now. David Dreyer getting kicked out of there. George Will getting kicked out of there.
Well, it's interesting. I was going to say, this whole thing started when I moved to New York City in 1998. The whole issue of Rudy Giuliani was, would he march or not each year? And now, of course, Mayor Michael Bloomberg does march because it's obviously a very important political.
Well, and he's a Republican.
Step. And he's a Republican.
Yeah.
However, Elliot Spitzer, who is running for governor of New York State, is not going to be marching. So, every year when this parade rolls around, it's always about who's marching, who's not, and what are they going to stand up for. Now, there is a woman on the city council, I believe, her name is Quinn, and she is an out lesbian, and she's Irish, and she is not going to be marching. One, she said she wouldn't march, and two, they wouldn't let her anyway.
You know what's amazing to me about this, Greg Gorman, is that Ireland is the land of mind-boggling historic repression. I mean, there's an amazing book, and I highly encourage this to all of our listeners if you can find it. It's published in England. It's not available in the United States. It's called The Crack. And it's the story of, it's got nothing to do with the drug. The crack is what the Irish refer to as a good conversation among friends. And it's a story of two families, a Catholic family and a Protestant family that live a few blocks from each other in Northern Ireland. And this American reporter who spent like 3 years there living with them and watching the members of their family die. This is during the 70s and 80s, during the worst of the Troubles. But, I mean, going back to the potato famine when Ireland was actually exporting wheat to England enough to feed everybody in Ireland, yet a million people died of famine because of the repression, the oppression of the British. The penal colony, I mean, one of the reasons why one of the biggest St. Patrick's Day parades in the United States, is a celebration of the United States, is going to be down in Georgia, is because the state of Georgia, I lived there for 13 years, I know, the state of Georgia used to be a penal colony for the British, and they shipped Irish there. And when Georgia started refusing to take them, or the United States started refusing to take them, that's when they started shipping them to Australia. And so here you've got a country of people who should understand what it's like to be a repressed minority. Why are they like this?
Well, I think what would be interesting, Tom, is I've never, unfortunately, been to Ireland. My grandfather's father was born in Ireland, and my last name, Gorman, actually used to be O'Gorman. And my great-grandfather dropped the O because of all the racism against the Irish when he came to the United States.
Right.
I've never been to Ireland, but I think it would be interesting
to talk
to Irish who thought about this whole, crisis of if you're gay, you're not allowed to march in the parade, what they would think in Ireland as opposed to what we think here in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Now, I know a few people in Ireland. Had I thought it out well enough ahead, I would have tracked one of them down and put them on the air here. That's a very good one. Interesting. Well, so we just have a few seconds left, Greg. What else is in a sentence? What else is happening in the world?
The only other thing is, Karen Hughes may be back in the White House to help shake up the things and make the president more popular.
Oh, maybe she'll make him as popular as she made us with the Middle Easterners when she went over there.
That's all I'm saying, Tom.
There you go. Greg Gorman, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Greg. Have a great weekend. It's 27 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Political contributions by corporations. A law. Now, just consider, if a law like this was on the books, no corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees, or anything of value to any political party, any organization, any committee, or any individual for any political purpose whatsoever, or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind, or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. Penalty. Any officer, employee, agent, attorney, or other representative of any corporation acting for and in behalf of such corporation who shall violate this act shall be punished upon conviction by a fine or by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than 1 nor more than 5 years, or by both. Such fine and imprisonment in the discretion of the court or judge before whom such conviction is had, and if the corporation shall be subject to a penalty, then by forfeiture in double the amount of any fine, and if a domestic corporation, it shall be dissolved. If after the proper proceeding upon quo warranto in either the circuit or supreme court of the state to be prosecuted by the attorney general of the state, the court shall find and give judgment that section 1 of this act has been violated as charged. And if a foreign or non-resident corporation, its right to do business in this state shall be declared forfeit. That was the law in the state of Wisconsin virtually from its founding until the 1950s. And similar laws were found in every single state in this nation. And in the roughly the 1880s is the rise of the robber barons, which we are seeing all over again. The rise of the oligarchy, the rise of basically in the 1880s, it started out with the railroads and with Standard Oil, John Rockefeller's. The oligarchs rose up. They said, oh, we can't have laws like this. And thus began the great rush away from democracy and toward corporatocracy in the United States. And it's time for us to reverse it. The progressive and populist movement emerged in the 1880s and the 1890s and was very, very active through the early 1900s, brought about the first laws against child labor, the first laws that allowed women to, the constitutional amendment that allowed women to vote, constitutional amendment 1917 that said that the Senate is going to be directly elected by the people, not appointed in smoky back rooms in state capitals. Yes, that's how the Senate was, senators were appointed until 1917. Or maybe it was 1913. It's either the 13th Amendment, 1917, or the 17th Amendment, 1913, one or the other. In any case, in the 19-teens, the progressive and populist movement, pushing for unionization, the Wobblies, the International Workers of the World, and on and on it went, and then in 1905, the Supreme Court started knocking down those things. And it wasn't until Franklin Roosevelt came along after a series of right-wing administrations that these things actually changed. Teddy Roosevelt was the last progressive. In 1907, Teddy Roosevelt got a federal law passed very similar to the one I just read you. And it's actually still on the books. But it has been diluted and watered down by amendment after amendment, by law after law ever since then, to the point where it's nonsensical. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, Rebecca in Edmonds, Washington. Hey, Rebecca, what's on your mind today?
Morning. Good morning. Well, I should be out gathering signatures for the Clean Energy Initiative, but I just had to call you. After listening to Representative Sanders, I started thinking a lot about how we win in November, and I still believe that we do need to support very enthusiastically Feingold's censure resolution. Because the only way to get information out and to get the media on this is to just have a lot of people talking about it. And I heard somebody say, somebody in the media who's not, I don't remember if it was progressive or conservative or what, but he was saying that it's really about ratings, and the more people are talking about something, no matter which side it's on, they'll cover it. Mm-hmm. So we just need a lot more discussion about, as my button says, there's dirt under every bush. And I love that button. Don't you like that?
I love it.
But we need, as you're doing, you're giving us great information all the time, but we need more on the mainstream media, which I seldom watch, but I know that they're not covering these things.
Yeah.
Well, they need more attention.
And the thing that you can do, Rebecca, is you can contact, you know, whatever your local TV station is. If you see a story that doesn't seem to be telling the whole story, give them a call.
Mm-hmm.
Call up and say, I'd like to talk to your news director. You'll probably get voicemail, but you can still leave a message.
Right.
And just, you know, be in their face. Send letters to the editor of the local newspaper or call them. I think it's important for citizens to talk back to their media. I mean, we provide a vehicle here for it, both your local station there, Talk 1090, and as well, you know, this national program. We provide, to a certain extent, a vehicle for people to talk back to the media. But I think it's important to be talking back to the management. It's also important to be talking back to the advertisers. And so if there are products that are being advertised on programs that you support, to let them know. Oddly enough, the reverse doesn't work, which is interesting.
What reverse?
The reverse of the advertiser trick. For example, one of my affiliates, I'm not going to name the station, but the program director called me up and he said I've got this conservative who's like calling all of your advertisers and hassling them. And a couple of them called me up and said, what should I do? And he said, you should be very glad that this guy's listening to the show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so the bottom line is that if you call and say, you know, hey, I heard you advertising on Bill O'Reilly and I'm not going to support you, they'll go, oh, you listen to Bill O'Reilly.
Well,
whereas if you call and say, hey, I heard you advertising on the Tom Hartman program and I am going to support you, I am going to buy your products, they go, oh, you're listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, that's
so
helpful. You know, the corporatocracy issue, we're having Carl Mayer here, who works with Elliot Spitzer. He's very active in the anti-corporatocracy movement.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Mayer will be in Seattle on March 25th at 7 p.m. at Ballard at Trinity Methodist Church, and he'll be in Olympia the day after. Mm-hmm. And he's just phenomenal, I guess.
He is. Yeah, that's great.
Do you know him?
I don't know him personally, but I know of him.
True? I know you're in Oregon. Is it true that the anti corporatocracy people down there are working to get a corporation nominated to be governor?
I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty close to these folks here.
It's clever, because then if people say, well, you can't do that because it's not a person.
Oh, that's funny. I'll have to look into that, because I know the folks who are the leaders of that movement. Rebecca, thanks a lot for the call. That's fascinating. Susan in Anchorage, Alaska, KUDO. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to ask you, the other day I heard you tell a story about Bush's bad behavior in court with his Yale buddies after he trashed. We were wondering if there was any kind of transcript or written record of this anywhere.
No, this is a friend of mine who's a professor at a major university who just was in his class with him at Yale. But there is, if you look at Mark Hatfield's book, A Fortunate Son, some people have trashed that. That was the first book to out Bush's cocaine use, and it's been thoroughly trashed by the right-wingers because Mark Hatfield, the author, had a criminal background, in addition to being a writer. And so they say, well, you can't trust that. Instead, what I suggest very strongly that you read is Kitty Kelly's book, The Family, about the Bush administration. That book has been vetted, double vetted, triple vetted. Nobody has ever sued her successfully. Frank Sinatra tried to sue her for one of her books. He lost. I mean, Kitty Kelly really does her research. And that book, you can buy it for $1. Used, because the Bush administration during the election, when that book came out, they so successfully manipulated the media. I got one of the emails from the RNC saying this book is on a blacklist, do not discuss it on the air. I mean, that's what they did. And the media just didn't discuss it on the air. It was like one day she was on and the next day it was like a switch got thrown. And so the publisher printed hundreds of thousands of copies of the book that never sold. And so most people don't even know that it's out there, and it's not in bookstores anymore for all practical purposes. But you can buy it online used for $1. And it's just a mind-boggling book. And it does tell the story of young George's cocaine use and his other as they say, youthful indiscretions.
Can I ask or make one more point,
sure,
if there's time? I wonder what you thought of, I know this is hypothetical, but what do you think the chances are in 2008 that the Republicans could steal another election, you know, through the Diebold machines if they're still there, or if, if it's still wartime that George Bush might declare, state of war and suspend elections? And then, you know, this country is about had it if that happens.
Yeah.
Do you think
I think all of that is within the realm of possibility. Keep in mind, though, Susan, that they didn't just steal the elections with hacked machines. I mean, I'm convinced that there were hacked machines. The fact that all of the errors tilt toward Bush in the 2000, the 2002, and the 2004 elections, Bush or his buddies, says to me that these are not random errors. But the fact of the matter is that in Ohio, there may have been hacked machines in Ohio, but the overwhelming evidence is that, you know, there was a hacked system, that Ken Blackwell took 300,000 people off the voting rolls in areas that voted as much as 90% Democratic, and nobody off the voting rolls in the Republican areas. So hundreds of thousands of people showed up to vote, and in many cases actually voted, and their vote was never counted. And so, you know, and plus the Republicans had been paying this company to travel around the United States and set up these booths. There was a bunch of them, you know, in Las Vegas, a TV station actually got them on TV. Voter registration booths to legally and legitimately register people to vote. But if you filled out that you wanted to vote in the Democratic primaries, that you were a Democrat, they tore up and threw away your voter registration. So all these Democrats, you know, and these were operating hundreds, maybe thousands all across the United States of these little card table things that they set up in front of the federal buildings and shopping malls and libraries and even voter registration places all over the country. And it's perfectly legal to do this. It's not legal to tear them up and throw them away. The registrations, that, you know, that's the crime that they committed, and they were never prosecuted, even though they got caught at it. It's Republican connected, so there's a lot of ways that they're stealing these elections. 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And happy St. Patty's Day to you, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations all across this great land. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, David in Blaine, Washington. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, it's great to talk to you again. Hey, I bring a message from St. Patrick's himself. All members of Congress, especially the senators who do not sign on to Feingold's resolution for censure of George Bush, are basically saying to the people within the halls of the People's House, we've broken our oath to uphold the Constitution, or the cornerstones of the Constitution, I should say, and the Bill of Rights, and encourage more violation, fraud, waste, and abuse to we the people and to the people of the world.
Well, I agree with you. Are you channeling St. Pat?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All righty, David. Thank you very much. St. Patrick, by the way, a Roman citizen in all probability who went to Ireland to Christianize the Irish and convert the heathen Irish. Julie in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Julie.
Hey, I was wondering, first of all, speaking about the media, how I think the pulse of it is how, you know, obviously the egregious lack of coverage of the Bush administration versus the Clinton administration, you know, mm-hmm. beaten to death with Monica Lewinsky, to the point where people started being brainwashed, thinking it was a constitutional crisis, which that's what it was called. So I think that everyone, your listeners, I started doing it, you would be incredible, start making a Bush administration dirty laundry list and compare, itemize everything, write it down so it's black and white.
Yeah. I have a list here of the top 50 crimes of the Bush administration. It's just the problem is that every week or so we have to update it. We have to knock something off the bottom and add something to the top.
No, I'm talking about the whole entire list. I've started writing one. It's like over 1,000. I'm not kidding. It's every day we hear something and it's pushed aside, whereas this, you know, is laughable with the Lewinsky issue. I mean, we were beaten to death.
Yeah, whereas with Clinton it was like, gee, they fired the wrong people in the travel office.
Right, exactly. And what Bush, I mean, the breaking of the law, you know, somebody wanting to censure him, people, media is walking away. I mean, I'm at the point or thinking is the media, I mean, obviously they're complicit, but I'm almost thinking there's collusion here. I mean, I think there needs to be I just really think that a dirty laundry list, I think compiling everything. Every day I hear something, and it just, it's unbelievable that it's not covered or it's not even looked into.
Yeah.
What is going on?
What is going on is one hand is washing the other. If you go to theyrule.net, it's a remarkable website. I'm assuming it's still there. It's been a year or so since I checked it out. But theyrule.net has a list, www.theyrule.net,
okay.
Has a list of the officers, the people who are members, not the officers, the members of the boards of directors,
okay.
Of all the major corporations in the United States. And you can, like, pick a half a dozen different corporations and come up with some.
Mm-hmm.
And you get these incredible lists of interlocking boards that are just, you know, it's extraordinary. And you they're all interlocking with the media. You know, it all comes back around to the news media as well. And at some point you say, oh, wait a minute, it's how can this be?
Right.
How is it possible that all this kind of thing is going on? And it's more like, you know, hey, we're all part of the same club.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's this whole thing is it just doesn't work well.
It doesn't
work well. And we got to do something about it. I mean, you know, for example, passing a law that says that you can't have people who are on the boards of directors.
Right.
It's just you can't do that anymore.
That's why
you can't be on multiple boards.
Do this. We need to do a dirty laundry list and put the most egregious crimes at the top, perhaps. And then the smaller ones, I mean, we're talking, it is the whole administration. I mean, when you have people like Paul O'Neill from Pittsburgh, who is a number one citizen, I mean, this guy is, you know, as clean as the day, you know, whatever the expression is. He's just highly respected and honest as his day is long. When you have someone like that, and there are several other people Sandra Day O'Connor, you know, talking against us. This is getting out of hand.
I absolutely agree with you. Thank you very much for calling, Julie.
Thank you.
A good point you make. Here's the list. This is the law I read to you earlier. It was from my book, Unequal Protection. This is also from Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights by Tom Hartman. IBM shares a board member with Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola shares a board member with AT&T. AT&T shares a board member with Citigroup. This is all as of about 3 years ago when this book was published. Citigroup shares a board member with Lucent Technologies. Lucent Technologies shares a board member with Chevron, which shares a board member with Hewlett-Packard, which shares a board member with Boeing, which shares a board member with Sara Lee, which shares a board member with Bank One Corporation, which shares a board member with Cardinal Health, which shares a board member with Freddie Mac, which shares a board member with Lehman Brothers Holdings, which shares a board member with Pepsi, which shares a board member with Bank of America, which shares a board member with Motorola, which shares a board member with J.P. Morgan Chase, which shares a board member with ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil shares a board member with SBC Communications, which owns Ameritech, Pac Bell, Southwestern Bell, among others, which shares a board member with PGE Communications, which shares a PGE Corporation, which shares a board member with Home Depot, which shares a board member with General Electric, which shares a board member with Delphi Automotive, which shares a board member with Goldman Sachs, which shares a board member with Ford Motor Company, which shares a board member with Sprint, which shares a board member with Allstate, who shares a board member with AMR, which owns American Airlines, which shares a board member with Aetna, which shares a board member with Dell Computer, which shares a board member with Prudential Insurance, which shares a board member with Dow Chemical. Dow Chemical shares a board member with MetLife, which shares a board member with Verizon, which shares a board member with USX, formerly US Steel, which shares a board member with Lockheed Martin, which shares a board member with Enron, which shares a board member with Compaq, which shares a board member with Dynergy, which shares a board member with CVS, which shares a board member with Fannie Mae, which shares a board member with Conoco, which shares a board member with IE DuPont, which shares a board member with IBM, and which shares a board member with Coca-Cola, which is where we began. It's a circle. You get it? We started with Coca-Cola. We ended with Coca-Cola. And we went through that whole list. Page 202, 203, and 204 of Unequal Protection. And as I said, you can find this stuff at theyrule.net. I'm not sure how recently it's been updated, but it was an amazing website. It's 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
A And welcome back, my friends, to the place where liberals fiendishly plot for total world domination. Well, or at least fair elections and the national health care system. Let's start with that. And a decent minimum wage. And getting corporate power out of the halls of Congress. You realize if you add up the entire political body, as it were, all the people who are affiliated with politics in one way or another, members of Congress, their family, their staff, everybody who works in government and related to government in Washington, D.C., in decision-making capacities, you know, Congress, the White House, Senate, you come up with about 30,000 people. There's more than 32,000 lobbyists. What are the odds? Maybe Dick Cheney needs to go duck hunting and or quail hunting and I'm not even going to finish that sentence. Not even going to go. It was a joke and a bad one. 7 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, my friends. I'm sure you've heard the story. Airline screeners fail government bomb tests. They tried to smuggle bombs. This was the government itself. This was the Government Accountability Office was doing this at the behest of Congress. 21 airports tried to smuggle bomb-making materials through. In several cases, they actually even put something in the bag that would cause the screeners to do a separate search on the bag, and the screeners didn't find the material. Now, this, a lot of people are going to use this to slam the people who work at the TSA, who, by the way, I believe are union members. And, oh, gee, they're overpaid because they're union members. That's going to be the whole rant of the right-winger. You know, trust me, it'll happen. But this is not a slam on these people. This is a system that they are part of, but they didn't, you know, choose to make it this way. This is a system that, tragically, we need, but is as much about show as it is about actually, you know, stopping things. There's a million. You know, the guys who got on with the box cutters in the first place? You can buy box cutters where the handle is plastic, and the blade is only a little piece of metal that is, you know, half inch long by a half inch wide. It's not going to set off a metal detector. It's less metal, and there isn't a belt buckle. So the whole thing, the guys who got on the planes because of box cutters, they could still walk through airport security. Well, maybe not if they put the box cutter in their bag to be x-rayed, but, you know, if they put it in their clothes. Or, you know, make it really, I mean, I'm not, like, revealing tricks of the trade or anything like this. This is stuff that was in the 9/11 report. You know, if they simply put the blade for the box cutter in their belt near the buckle, so somebody wands over it and goes, oh, it's the buckle. It's firing off the wand, making it beep. I mean, there's still, yes, there is, you know, possibly a small impediment. Yes, you know, and yes, we may need that. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have the TSA and all this kind of thing. What I am saying is that, you know, unfortunately, I suspect that the TSA personnel are going to be the ones who are getting the, you know, dumped on about this, particularly by the right-wing talk show hosts and whatnot, and that's a shame. You know, it's just like the teachers. You know, the schools aren't doing well because we're not funding them well, because we're not making a serious commitment to education in this country, because the corporate and the conservative elite really don't want an educated populace. But people get concerned about that, and they say, yeah, the schools aren't doing well. Oh, it must be because the teachers are overpaid. Yeah, that's going to solve the problems of the schools. Have all the teachers join the ranks of the working poor. Well, they want to go, you know, they don't hide this, that they want the TSA screeners to go back to making the same wage as people at Burger King. But in any case, my point of all this is that, you know, once again, we're seeing that this administration bears a startling resemblance to the Kingdom of Oz.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting one. This is from Newsmax, the right-wing news site, conservativenewsmax.com. Kurt Weldon, the Republican congressman who broke the Able Danger story, the fact the Able Danger data mining operation that seems that what Able Danger is all about is that the Pentagon, perhaps even Don Rumsfeld, knew that 9/11 was going to happen before 9/11 happened and did nothing to stop it. And Rumsfeld may have even told Bush. I mean, we just don't know. There hasn't been a thorough investigation. But Kurt Weldon has been exposing some of this stuff, Republican from Pennsylvania. Now he's come out and he says Osama bin Laden is dead. And I say, well, Kurt, welcome to the real world. He's been dead for years. But, you know, what's Bush going to do with that? I mean, this has got to be a bit of a problem for Bush. Oh, bin Laden is dead? Well, we'll have to invent a new one. Oh, it's now it's Zarqawi. Yeah. The Washington Post today. For years, the Bush White House and its allies in Capitol Hill, article by Jim Vandehei, seemed like one of the most unified teams Washington had ever seen, passing most of Bush's agenda with little dissent. Privately, however, many lawmakers felt underappreciated, ignored, and sometimes bullied by what they regarded as a White House intent on running government with little input from them. Oh, now we're learning that the Republicans, really, for the last 5 years, the Republicans really didn't like Bush. You get the subtext of this? I've been telling you for months now that the Republicans are going to run against Bush in 2006, and Bush is going to encourage them to do that because he doesn't want to be impeached and Karl Rove doesn't want to go to prison. And that's why they played good cop, bad cop on the Dubai ports deal, and they will find other things to play good cop, bad cop on right up to Election Day, absent. The only thing that might cause them to stop playing good cop, bad cop is if we go to war in Iran or someplace else. I've been predicting Syria all this time. Syria for the midterms, Iran for 2008. But, you know, who knows? I could be wrong. If we go to war with somebody, number one, and I think, you know, or maybe Bush will do it the same way he did with Iraq. He'll pump it hard during the midterms, which is 2006, and then he'll make sure that the war is going in time for the 2008 election. It worked before. No sitting president in the history of the United States has ever failed to be reelected during time of war. The only possible exception to that would be Lyndon Johnson, whose own party came to him and said, you know, Lyndon, this mess you've got over in Vietnam, you are not going to run for president again. Because you done screwed up. Now, the Republican Party said that to one of their own once. Back in the late 1870s, early 1880s, I forget the year, Ulysses S. Grant wanted to run for a third term. Must have been 1886. Must have been the election of 86 or 84. I forget which was the presidential year. But in any case, because he was followed, as I recall, by Grover Cleveland, he wanted to run for a third term. And because of the Republican bribery scandals, the railroad bribery scandals, and all the corruption of his administration, even though he himself had not been demonstrated to be corrupt, he was merely incompetent. His own Republican Party said, nope, you're not going to do it. Too much corruption, or at least too much that was caught. So anyhow, this back to this Washington Post story, Jim Vandehei's piece in the Washington Post today, this is the beginning of it. The Republicans saying, Well, as the article goes on, often it was to pass items, an expanded federal role in education and the No Child Left Behind law and an expensive prescription drug benefit under Medicare that left conservatives deeply uneasy. What Bush is facing now, beyond just election year jitters by legislators eyeing his depressed approval ratings, is a rebellion that has been brewing since the days when he looked invincible, say many lawmakers and strategists. See what they're saying? Oh, we were good all along. We were good Republican. Bush is the bad Republican. He's the one. He's the one who's breaking the law. He's the one who's doing things that shouldn't be done. We didn't want that Medicare bill. We didn't want that no left child left behind thing. Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, he says, the White House of the Times has been non-responsive and arrogant. There are 1,000 cuts, small cuts, he says, that are ignored when things are going well, but rear their heads when things are not going well. Peter King, Republican from New York, running scared. He says members felt they were willing to take a lot of tough votes and not get much in return. Yeah. Norm Ornstein, congressional scholar, he's calling it the battered Congress syndrome. Yeah, Bush has just been beating up the Republicans in Congress. He has been so bad to them. They have given him nothing that he wants. They have totally trashed. Yeah, right. If you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you. John Thune, Republicans from South Carolina, they list him as the prime example of such perceived slights. Handpicked by the White House to challenge Tom Daschle in 2004, he won the race based on his promise to protect South Dakota's Ellsworth Air Force Base from being closed. And as soon as it was, as the election was over and he got into the Senate, Republicans got the Senate, Bush is back in power, they closed the Air Force Base. And he goes and complains to the White House. They say, why are you whining? We got you in the Senate just because you had to lie to people. Hey, that's what we do. Now, that's not a quote from the Washington Post. That's from me. Anyhow, 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
If you've got something to say, why don't you say it?
Yeah, okay, Bush lied, people died.
Why don't you give it?
I sent $25 to Russ Feingold yesterday. Yeah, and so much for bouncing off the bumper. Anyhow, welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Jeffrey Kleinman is with us. He's the editor of DVD Talk, an online magazine. DVDtalk.com, the website, www.dvdtalk.com. Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. I understand a history of violence has hit DVD.
Yeah, it has. And it's a David Cronenberg film. It was nominated for Academy Award. William Hurt, who gave a really amazing performance in it. Its roots are in a graphic novel, but the real issue here about this film deals with what do you do when you have a history of violence? How does that affect your life? How does that affect things? And it's a real parallel between, you know, these characters and really our country, which has a history of violence.
Right. Now, also, you know, I noticed Good Night and Good Luck has come to DVD. I want to get to that in just a second. But wasn't this in the theaters just like very recently?
Yes, it was. And this is a real pattern, I think, with movies. And that is very, very quickly from theaters onto DVD. Studios are really looking at how to capitalize on the buzz around them that happens in the theaters and get them into people's hands as quickly as possible. So you'll see this happen a lot more and more.
Hmm, interesting. I haven't seen A History of Violence. What is the basic storyline?
Basically, you've got a small town, and you've got a guy who runs a cafe, and there's an event that happens that is, you know, a robbery. And the way in which he reacts creates questions about who he really is and what's really in his background, and some bad guys come around and confuse him for somebody else, perhaps. And it's a really great character story. Viggo Mortensen and Maria Bella are in it, and they're fantastic, along with Ed Harris. Really highly recommend this film.
Did you ever read that Hemingway short story where the guy either works or is a regular patron in a diner and the mob shows up?
It's got a lot of parallels to this.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of that story, but I think in the end he commits suicide to avoid them. But it's just one of the most powerful and touching stories, I think, that Hemingway ever wrote. Anyhow, Good Night and Good Luck is now also, this is a movie I have seen, and I thought it was brilliant. It deserved the Academy of nominations that it got, and now people can pick that up on DVD.
George Clooney is just really fantastic. I mean, the best thing you can say about a great director is that he surrounds himself by very talented people. And Good Night and Good Luck, not only is it a really great portrait of Edward R. Murrow and how he took on McCarthy and really at the peak of his power, but really a fascinating character study with just beautiful black and white images. This picture is gorgeous, and David Strathairn gives the kind of performance that you run and watch. He's just captivating as Murrow.
Yeah, the cinematography on this was extraordinary. The sets, the acting, I mean, everything. And I frankly, when it first started, I thought, oh, no, a black and white movie. And, of course, you know, I grew up when TV was black and white when I was a little kid. And I was thinking, this is, you know, this is going to be missing something. And in fact, what it did was it caught the era.
Yeah, it really does. Clooney co-writes this thing. He directs it. He's in it. And he does each task so well. And, you know, that's really tough to be involved in so many aspects of a film. And, you know, he's really establishing himself as really one of the great Hollywood guys of our generation.
Now, Sleeper Cell has come out in DVD. This is a film I'm absolutely unfamiliar with. Tell me about that. In fact, I'm not even sure I've heard of this.
Well, this is one of those great cable series. It premiered on Showtime. And it's, you know, it's cable series tend to take some of the themes that you see on network television and go a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeper Cell I call kind of like a thinking person's 24. It kind of combines the white knuckle kind of, you know, chase to stop the terrorism with a much deeper kind of intellectual look at some of the issues that surround the groups and the infiltration of those groups and such. Really exciting series, but yeah, it didn't get much attention when it hit Showtime.
Mm. Interesting, interesting. And what else is out there now, Jeffrey? We're talking with Jeffrey Kleinman, the editor of DVD Talk, dvdtalk.com, the website. Jeffrey, what else is out there that we should be looking for?
Well, there's a really interesting documentary called Through the Fire, which looks at Portland Trailblazer Sebastian Telfair and his kind of rise to high school with the expectations of becoming an NBA star. Really interesting look at the kind of the physics of where sports are right now. Some fun stuff like the first season of I Dream of Jeannie and nice musical documentary.
You mean the old original TV show?
The old original TV show is now out on DVD. Not the remake, the real thing.
Right, this is with the first Darren.
Yes.
Interesting. I guess I'm dating myself, but I remember.
Well, I'm dating myself, I guess, so too.
Mm.
But a great music documentary called Talon Van Sant, Be Here to Love Me. And this is a musician that has affected a lot of other musicians, but may not, again, a name that you may not be familiar with individually. So some really great stuff. You think right after the buzz of the Oscars, we'd have a lull, but, you know, they're really putting out some powerhouse stuff now.
Marvelous, marvelous. Jeffrey Kleinman, the editor of DVD Talk, dvdtalk.com, the online magazine. And check it out and see what his recommendations are. Jeffrey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks again.
Great talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be back with your calls after this. 1-866-440-8466. Right here on the True People's Radio.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here's a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. 34 minutes past the hour. And time for a Jaws Alert. A new study published yesterday at the online edition of the journal Science. This is from the New York, from the Wall Street Journal, Valerie Ballerain. The journal Science says rising ocean temperatures around the globe are to blame for the surge of intense hurricanes that has slammed the U.S. and other countries in recent years. The study by scientists at the Georgia Institute of Technology, which analyzed data on all hurricanes recorded from 1970 to 2004 in the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans, concluded that the very sharp increase in the number of very intense hurricanes cannot be attributed to a normal weather cycle or other natural explanations. They said the implication of these results is that the strong increasing trend is directly linked to the trend in tropical sea surface temperatures. Valerie Ballerain goes on to point out in the Wall Street Journal today, the study released yesterday amplifies the findings of an earlier report by two of the same authors, Drs. Webster and Curry, released 2 weeks after Katrina made landfall. That study concluded that while the total number of hurricanes worldwide is not increasing, wasn't increasing, the number of intense Category 4 and 5 hurricanes has doubled. Doubled. The world's atmosphere is changing, and Bush is like Nero. He is fiddling while Rome burns. This is just absolutely tragic, absolutely tragic. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey. Hey, Paula.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Paula. How about you?
I'm doing well. I want to bring, when you were discussing Republicans running from the Bush administration.
Right.
Trying to distance
running
them.
Against it, actually. They're going to be running against Bush. The same way that Ronald Reagan ran against government when he was the government. In his second term, Ronald Reagan ran for president as an outsider. He ran against the president of the United States, and he was the president of the United States.
Exactly. You know, the fact that he had keys to the White House didn't make any difference.
Right.
But one of the, I think what's going to be this, how the press is going to spin it, the corporate press, what I think they're going to do is they're going to, because when, you know, when you just go, now the talk is, well, the Bush administration, they're incompetent. That what's happening isn't a result of Republican policy. It's just they're, you know,
it's
the
just
administration's
George.
Just stupid.
Yeah, that's the point that I'm, that's a piece of the point that I'm making, that the press will be saying and Republicans will be saying that Bush is just dumb. He surrounded himself with bad people. He's not the brightest bulb on the tree. But your congressman and your senator, Republicans, you should reelect them. That's going to be the message.
And I think the other side of that spin is going to be, well, where were the Democrats?
Right, and the Democrats were there. They were fighting as hard as they could.
They didn't oppose him, so it's the fault of the Republican administration and the Democrats.
Right, although the reality is that they did oppose Bush. They opposed Bush very strenuously in some cases. I mean, there were times.
Well, they shot themselves in the foot on things like the bankruptcy bill,
yeah,
which was the perfect opportunity. I mean, nobody really likes the people they have to write checks to every month.
But see, Paula, here's the problem. When you say the Democrats, the majority of Democrats voted against the bankruptcy.
No, exactly, but it's the one, you know, Joe Biden in that case, I think Tom Carper, Mary Landrieu, who consistently, I think, votes against Democrats, who consistently toes the Republican Party line, and, of course, Joe Lieberman, who's like a tumor.
Yeah, well, and, you know, so we have a few toxic Democrats, but I think the danger here is picking up the meme, which the mainstream media will be putting out, that it's the Democrats. The Democrats voted for this war. I'm sorry. The majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives voted against the war. The Democrats voted for the bankruptcy bill. No, the majority of Democrats voted against the bankruptcy bill. The Democrats voted for CAFTA. No, the majority of Democrats voted against CAFTA. And, you know, right on down the list, the majority of Democrats, if you want to talk about the Democrats, the majority of Democrats have actually been behaving fairly well. There have been a few enablers in there. I agree with you.
Oh, I think so, too. The ones who voted for cloture on Alito and things like that. My only concern is that consistently, you know, especially, you know, the Feingold censure resolution stands out in that they're not seizing opportunities, yet, you know, like legitimate opportunities to say, no, we're opposing this. Like more, you know, visual, more vocal things that are being actually being spoken about.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, Paula. You know, a good point. But right now, our focus, rather than being on holding the Democrats to account, those few Democrats who are really sold out, I think really has to be on highlighting the fact that this is not about the Bush administration being incompetent. It's not even really about George W. Bush breaking the law, which he's clearly done and needs to be held to account for. This is about a worldview which is shared by the Republicans right across the board, that a conservative elite, a corporate elite, an inherited wealth elite should be owning and running this country. And it's wrong. It's just absolutely wrong. Paula, thanks for the call. I've got to move along. Audrey in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Audrey.
Hi. You have a very impressive audience. They're very well informed.
I agree. We have some of the smartest listeners in all of radio on this program.
Yes, for sure. My concern today is I live in a small town north and slightly west of Seattle, and we have water around us. And what we found out recently is that the naval station across the way, it's an ordnance station. You know, it keeps, for those who don't know what ordnance is, it's they stockpile all the explosives.
Right. Ordnance is a fancy word for things that can blow up.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we found out that they're retrofitting some of the submarines to handle the depleted nuclear missiles. The nuclear submarines that will be going in there are being retrofitted to handle depleted uranium missiles. That's our suspicion anyway. And we're not getting any information from the Navy. They don't really like, they're very kind about it. You know, they talk to us nicely, but they don't give us any information at all. And I'm also appalled at the fact that there's, newspapers have not talked about this at all, and it's there to be found if you look for it. I heard about it, and I started educating myself on this depleted uranium thing, and I had to look up a thing from Vanity Fair from December 03, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
No, it may have been 04.
Mm-hmm.
And what it turns out is we're using prodigious amounts of that stuff over in Iraq that was used during the Persian War, you know, the Gulf War, Desert Storm.
Yeah, we used it in 1991, and we used it also in Serbia.
And people have suffered from that use and
continue to.
They have, you know, suffered debilitating reaction from it. But the worst thing now is that they're using huge amounts of it, way far more than they used when they were dealing with the Desert Storm. And none of these people know that they're being exposed to radiation.
Mm-hmm.
They, like in the Desert Gulf War, I think that I read something like 320 tons. So this stuff, you know, when they use these missiles to fire it, and it's not just in missiles, it's in small millimeter, you know, 50 caliber things and 20 millimeter things.
Yeah, it's in the machine gun fire. Yeah,
it's
armor penetrating ordnance. Yeah, it's the.
It gives it a little extra oomph, you know.
Right, it's heavier than lead, so it has more momentum.
It gets going. The kinetic energy, I guess, is what supplies that.
Yep.
And so when they fire these things, it heats up, and this depleted uranium, which they get free from the reactors that have used it, you know, to enrich their uranium, these things vaporize, and they create almost, they create a mist, and it's these particles are smaller than a bacteria. So there is no way you can protect by using gas masks. You're going to breathe that stuff in, and you're going to have this stuff is going to rest in the lung, and once it gets into your system, and it affects things like the lung and the liver and the brain, it even affects the sperm production as well as the ovum. So these
they're seeing all of this in Gulf War vets. They're seeing all of this among people in Iraq. They're seeing all of this among people who live in Serbia.
Right.
But here's the thing: in Washington State, I mean, they may be putting these depleted uranium weapons into the missile, you know, into your submarines. I frankly don't know, but they're not firing them in Washington State, and so they're not vaporizing the stuff. So
we sit in the midst of volcano, tsunami, and earthquake country, and I don't know if it's the wisest thing to do. In this article on from the Vanity Fair, I think they called it self-destructive.
Well, you could say the same thing about nuclear power in general. You could talk about the Hanford Range. I mean, you know, yes, it goes on and on. But I don't disagree with you, Audrey, and I appreciate you raising the issue. Hopefully some of our listeners will get, you know, activated by that, and they'll say, hey, what's going on here? Maybe this is something we should be checking into. Jim in Pittsburgh. Hey, Jim, we got about a minute left. What's up?
Okay, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Well, thank you, and the same to you, Jim.
And I want to say that you and Russ Feingold embody the true Irish spirit that always fights for justice.
Well, thank you.
St. Patrick was the first world figure to come out against slavery, which says a lot.
Seriously?
That was in 430, the 430s, that was the first time any world figure came out and said slavery was wrong.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
We lost our Patriot Act fight, and that's very sad, but the UK-US extradition treaty is in the Foreign Relations Committee, and that's a further deterioration of our Bill of Rights. And the worst part of it, for instance, is that extradition would go from the judiciary to the executive. And so if you got not only the extradition, but any crimes and so forth. So it's really something that people ought to vote against.
Jim, send me a note on that, would you? Send me some information on that in email.
Okay, that's very vital. But thank you very much for what you do for our country. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jim. Yeah, and I look forward to it. I'll track that down also as well. And thank you for the call, and thanks for sensitizing us to it. That's something that slipped under my radar. We'll have to catch up on that one. 45 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
These are the days of an empty hand. Oh, you hold on to what you can.
And welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour. helping you with the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. Thanks so much, by the way, to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Alex Goldmark and Dan Jacobs at Air America, to Ben and Shelby at the White Rose Society and RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Hope you have a marvelous weekend. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Scott in San Diego, California. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Well, good morning, Tom. As I said before, Tom, stop them over there before they get over here is absolutely positively one of the best strategies we can employ. It's the most effective and the one that keeps us the safest in our fight against bird flu.
Against bird flu.
I was
going to say, yesterday on CNN, I saw J.C. Watts. I mean, he got the last word in this debate with Paul Begala, and his last word was, and we're following the right policy by stopping the terrorists in Iraq before they get over here. And I'm like, you know, you're trotting that old chestnut out, you know, that these guys are too dumb to chew gum and walk at the same time. I'm sorry. It's just, you know, it's...
But it really does work when you can... If we would spend just a few hundred million overseas in fighting flu, bird flu, and disease prevention...
I think that genie is out of the bottle, Scott. I think that genie is out of the bottle. I mean, trying to stop a virus is not like trying to stop a terrorist.
Too late, but we can still, with ongoing support overseas. I mean, what's going to happen to the bird flu with the results of the bird flu overseas? Can't we help over there before we have a problem over here?
I don't think so. I think it's too late. I think what we need to be doing right now is we need to be this country, our government, needs to be. Number one, cranking up the production of antiviral agents. Number two, getting more ventilators. And
that's not going to happen. They've cut the money back for that.
Oh, I know. No. I know. But I'm telling you, if the bird flu hits, or according to most scientists, when the bird flu hits, the cost of a box of latex gloves is going to go from $5 to $500. The cost of masks, I mean, we saw this during the SARS epidemic in Toronto, where when SARS got to Toronto, that a box of face masks that you just put on, you know, they were like $50 for a box of face masks that were selling for $3. You want to invest in something, buy rubber gloves and face masks.
You're sounding like what's his name that was on the news a couple of years back that said pretty close to the same thing. Here comes a crisis as an investment opportunity here.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know what else to... I'm not suggesting that people should be trying to profit from it, but the point is that because this government is, you know, this administration, rather, is dealing with this in such an incompetent fashion, you're going to see these kind of weird anomalies coming about, and what they are is proof positive that the Bush administration dropped the ball.
Joe Connison talks about this in his column at Salon.
Oh, really?
It's really good about this exact subject and what they're doing to cut funding everywhere while they continue to fund the war in Iraq. And I mean,
well, you got to have tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires too. I mean, that's the main focus of this administration. It's like, you know, it's like Bush trots out this autistic kid and pats him on the head and gives him a hug, and it gets all this, you know, nice feel-good TV, and then he goes back and he cuts programs to find out what's causing autism. Cuts them to zero.
And the same thing with the Veterans Administration here in San Diego. We had one of the leading researchers in prosthetics and orthotics. They're one of the best in the country, this VA hospital here. He's cut the money back for them.
Yeah.
They had to let a lot of guys go.
It just goes on and on. Scott, thanks for the call. Say what?
And they support the vets. Tom, I got to go. I'm going to start in a few seconds. I'm going to start screaming and spitting, and you don't want that on your radio.
There you go. Scott, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 54 minutes past the hour. Jim in Seattle on the line. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, hello, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better, Jim. How about you?
Well, I'm just fine today. Thank you. I have to take Bernie Sanders to task, however.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that Russ Feingold is on a very good track, and
Bernie did not put down Russ Feingold.
Well, no, I understand that, but I mean the thrust of what Bernie had to say was our main job is to win the election and secure the country.
Right, and then we can nail these guys. What's the old song? The old Australian song, nail their hides to the wall.
Right, but at the same time, I believe that is what Russ Feingold has started to do all on his own.
Yeah.
And he's done that because if you put the entire Congress in the position of either supporting the administration by refusing to do something about them or doing something about them and cutting them off.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you, Jim. Here's just for argument's sake, because I think, frankly, that there is something to be said for, you know, articles of impeachment and all that. But Bernie has signed on to John Conyers' bill. He's one of only 31 members of Congress who have signed that bill.
Oh, good.
House Resolution 635. Yeah, he signed it last Thursday. And that was the point of his speech today, was that he just signed on to this bill, and the bill is to create an investigation into whether there have been impeachable offenses. And Feingold is essentially saying the same thing. When Frist said, okay, we'll give you a vote, Feingold said, no, we don't want to vote right now. We want an investigation. And the Republicans are going to do everything they can to prevent that. But the point that Bernie makes that I think is really a solid point is that the media in this country can only focus on one thing at a time. There's the story du jour or the story of the week. And if they can make the story du jour all about Bush being impeached, then that means that we don't get to talk about the story being the fact that these guys are ripping us off, that the economy is in the tank, that they've been fighting the minimum wage for almost a decade and increasing the minimum wage, that they don't want there to be any kind of a national health care plan, that they're carving up Social Security and planning on selling it off piece by piece, that they're running us into debt massively, that they're destroying the social fabric, the social infrastructure, and the economic fabric and infrastructure of this nation. And none of that stuff will get talked about if the media starts going nuts about an impeachment thing.
Right, but you point out that the centralized control of the media is our biggest problem.
Well, it's certainly one of them. It's certainly one of them, Jim. And, you know, this is a conversation that probably has no end. It's sort of like, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg. But I think, frankly, all of it should be on the table. And so I don't think I'm disagreeing with you, Jim, and I appreciate your calling. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, Monday, conservative Colin Hanna will debate how illegal immigration should be handled. Julia Whitty says we have pushed the seas to the brink. That and more and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. We're in the Democracy Zone. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.